Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims. Today, we tell about a museum in Virginia that helps tell the story of slavery in America. We also hear some great jazz from the past brought to new life in a Broadway musical. But first, we look at a movie about an explosive historical event. Pompeii was a Roman city that existed hundreds of years ago. A violent eruption of Mount Vesuvius in the year 79 AD buried the city and killed many people. Now, a movie using the latest 3D technology tells the story of the explosive event. Catherine Cole reports.
It was the jewel of our empire.
People of Pompeii! Let the games begin!
Researchers who study ancient cultures say parts of the movie Pompeii are very true to history. Sarah Yeomans is an archaeologist and professor at West Virginia University. She praises the film for its recreation of the city of Pompeii.
I think they did a wonderful job recreating the city from the archaeological site.
Images of people of Pompeii buried in rock and ash awaken the imagination. Pompeii director Paul Anderson visited the ancient city of Pompeii. He remembers a representation of a couple holding each other when the ash and other material came down.
There are these two intertwined bodies, and the lovers are kind of just looking at one another. And that, for me, was very emotional, and that was really the basis of the entire movie.
The film Pompeii is mostly a love story, but it shows many interesting details about the event. Director Paul Anderson says Pompeii is the perfect movie for 3D. The 3D technology captures the powerful explosions of Mount Vesuvius.
Well, I think this is the kind of movie that 3D was really invented for. You want to be immersed in this kind of ancient civilization and the sheer spectacle of it.
The movie shows Vesuvius expelling balls of fire over Pompeii that destroy everything in their path. But experts say the eruption was not exactly like that. Rosalie Lopez is a scientist with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology. She says the eruption would have caused volcanic rock and ash to rain down on the city. She adds that the movie makers were correct to include an earthquake and tsunami in the event. But she says the real tsunami hundreds of years ago was much smaller. Ms. Lopez adds that people who live near Mount Vesuvius today would get a warning before an eruption.
We now have a lot of early warning systems because volcanoes don't erupt without some precursor sign. And Vesuvius could erupt again. Vesuvius does has smaller eruptions, so it doesn't mean that it would be as bad as it was back then.
Archaeologist Sarah Yeomans says Pompeii filmmakers do capture the politics of the time. It is not a favorable representation of the Roman rulers.
The Pompeians did not unilaterally consider themselves to be Romans. They were brought involuntarily into the expanding empire.
The desire for freedom is an idea expressed again and again in the film. Actor Adewale Akinoye Agbaje plays the enslaved fighter Atticus. He says Pompeii's message about freedom and equality are timeless.
Freedom and equality, which is timeless, you know, and I think we all still strive for that today.
Pompeii is surely a Hollywood love story. It does not exactly represent the natural disaster that destroyed the city, But most experts agree that the movie does give people a good idea of what life was like in ancient Pompeii. And the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love. Great clouds all over the hills, bringing darkness from above. The award-winning movie, 12 Years a Slave, is based on the writings of Solomon Northup. Mr. Northup was captured and sold into slavery in 1841. His kidnapper was a well-known slave trader named James Birch. Mr. Birch owned property in Alexandria, Virginia, where he would imprison the men, women, and children before their sale. The large property was called a slave pen. Today, all that remains of the slave pen is one building. It has been turned into a museum about slavery. At the Freedom House Museum, visitors get a close look at what slaves experienced. Julian Kiganda is the supervisor of the museum. She says she cannot imagine how the captured felt about the possibility of never seeing their families again.
Seeing that African Americans had experienced on a regular basis the separation of family, that for me was just so heartbreaking.
Most of the slaves picked tobacco on local farms. They were also sold to cotton farmers farther south. Audrey Davis is the head of Alexandria's Black History Museum. She says slaves came from many different places.
They were coming from a variety of places and then being held in the slave pens until they were shipped out or until someone was buying them directly from the pen, and then they would be brought out for inspection.
James Birch's slave pen was one of the most profitable in the country. There was a kitchen, an eating area, a hospital, and a space for exercise. The traders knew that slaves who looked healthy would sell for higher prices. Miss Kaganda says some traders would even give slaves new clothes.
The tailor shop would create the clothes that the slaves would wear at the market so that they looked expensive. The slaves, they would actually try to get rid of these clothes as soon as they could because they did not want to be reminded of being sold at market.
Miss Kaganda says slaves were sold for as much as four times what the traders had paid for them.
People would pay $1,200 for a slave back in those days, which is the equivalent of almost $30,000 in today's money.
Jacqueline Nordorf visited the museum from California. She says it is scary to imagine slaves crowded against the museum walls.
It saddens me, but it is our history. It was scary to be in a place where the slaves were actually kept and these people were sold for their lives.
The victims were chained together and shipped to markets in North America. Sometimes after sale, they were forced to walk long distances to farms. Visitors to the Freedom House Museum are permitted to touch the slave chains. Ms. Kaganda explains why.
We felt it was important for people to have, you know, the ability to actually feel these things and feel the reality of what happened here.
The Northern Virginia chapter of the Urban League owns the building. The Urban League is an organization that works to empower African Americans. Cynthia Dinkins is the chief executive officer of the chapter. Ms. Dinkins says she and other workers feel the presence of the dead in the museum. Ms. Dinkins says they have seen and heard things they cannot explain.
I felt something brush against me, but I didn't feel threatened at all. And they're like, oh no, yes, yes, we've experienced things like that, doors opening and closing, footsteps.
The slave pen was closed during the American Civil War. The city of Alexandria surrendered to U.S. government soldiers in 1861. The slave pen was turned into a prison, used to jail disobedient government soldiers and rebel soldiers who were captured.
What da do, da da do, da da do.
The Cotton Club in New York City helped bring fame to many African-American performers during the early 1920s to the 1940s. Now, a new musical play celebrates some of the greatest jazz musicians who played there. Bob Doty has more on the show After Midnight.
Two men partnered to create After Midnight. Wynton Marsalis is the artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center in New York City. His friend, Jack Vertel, is the director of a company that brings old musicals back to life in new shows. Their shared love of the music of this time gave birth to After Midnight.
Midnight, Harlem. Once it was true. In 1932, Harlem's heartbeat was a drumbeat. After midnight, early blue evening, lights ain't come on yet. Coming on now!
The Cotton Club was in the Harlem neighborhood of the city. David Levering Lewis is a history professor at New York University and writer of the book When Harlem Was in Vogue. He says, After Midnight shows what one night at the famous nightclub was really like.
I thought it captured the flavor of what would have been one night the best ever at the Cotton Club.
Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, and Bessie Smith are just some of the musicians represented in After Midnight. Mr. Vertel and Mr. Marsalis used old sound recordings from the Cotton Club to recreate what it was really like.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our famous Cotton Club. It's great to see so many friends here tonight enjoying themselves in spite of the cover charge. And if you can spare a minute from your merrymaking, I'd like to have the pleasure of introducing the greatest living master of jungle music, the rip-roaring harmony hound, none other than Duke Ellington.
But there is an ugly side to the history. The Cotton Club was located in the center of the African-American neighborhood of Harlem. The club used black performers, but the club only permitted white people to attend the shows. Mr. Levering Lewis describes how even the celebrated composer W.C. Handy was not permitted to enter.
As everyone knows, it was infamously racially exclusive. W.C. Handy wished to go one evening to the Cotton Club, and he was turned away, and he could hear his music being performed.
Cotton Club shows often presented African Americans in insulting ways, but this is not explored in After Midnight. Mr. Vertel says the creators wanted to free the music from its past.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
I'm June Sims. Our program was written by Anna Mateo and Jonathan Evans. Katie Weaver was the producer. Do you have a question about American life, people, or places? Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. We might answer your question in a future show. Join us again next week for American Mosaic from VOA Learning English.